for 25 years. Nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey, it's State of State. We got your Nittany Line update. It's a football discussion with Tom and Justin, so kick back and press play.
With former Penn State and NFL defensive back Justin King, I'm Tom Hanifin. This is State of State. This podcast is presented by BetOnline. The college football playoff has concluded, but the NFL playoffs are about to begin. Plus, the NBA, the NHL, combat sports, and more are in full swing. BetOnline has all the up-to-the-second odds, news, and info. Head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. State of State is presented by BetOnline, where the game starts. Also, State of State is a proud supporter of Blue White Outfitters. Blue White Outfitters was created as a retail shop meant to highlight the confidence, competitiveness, and fearlessness of the elite athletes found throughout the history of Penn State University. Check out their Lockdown U and Lawn Boys merchandise today. All sales from Blue White Outfitters directly benefit Penn State student athletes. Visit www.bluewhiteoutfitters.com today. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to State of State. We all bow to the altar of Terry Smith because Lockdown U is struck again, this time in the transfer portal. In one day, Penn State has landed 2 cornerbacks in the transfer portal. One is a former 5-star recruit in Georgia defensive back A.J. Harris, who is only played 1 season, a true freshman, 7 games at the University of Georgia this past season. The other is Florida cornerback Jalen Kimber, who has played 2 seasons, ironically, between Georgia and Florida and has 2 more years of eligibility. This is a huge day for Penn State football rolling into 2024. Justin, I am thrilled that we do this show with you because you actually had a hand in recruiting Jalen Kimber once upon a time. So I want to start with Kimber and we'll get to Harris here in a minute. What do you think about Kimber overall?
Overall, he was a playmaking type of DB. I remember he was one of the last defensive backs that I extended a scholarship offer, presented to the defensive staff before I left and went to the XFL. But the one thing that I remember, he was a young guy at the time. So we offered him early. It was a talent that you could see. And I want to say we were probably his 3rd or 4th offer at Penn State. So he was like an early identification type of prospect, but he had the traits, right? He moved well, he moved efficient. He had length and he made plays on the ball and finished plays. He ended up going to Georgia and whatever happened there, transitioned to Florida. And as we see in this new college landscape, found his home back at Penn State. But again, he was a player that I was always fond of from his skill set and productivity on the field.
There's some consistency here with what Penn State is doing this go-round in the transfer portal. Familiarity with Julian Fleming, familiarity with Nolan Rucci. Same thing with A.J. Harris. We'll get to that in a moment, but the same thing with Jalen Kimber. Does that familiarity with Kimber breed results? We're going to have to find out, but looking at the corner position altogether for Penn State. You've got five guys currently on the roster before these transfers happen that are listed at cornerback: Cam Miller, Zion Tracy, Elliott Washington II, Lamont Payne, and Audavian Collins, who was a transfer from Mississippi State last season. Collins looks to be somebody that they're molding for the future. Looking at Kimber, is he a plug-and-play starter the second he walks in the building?
Just knowing, I mean, knowing my pop's personality from a coaching standpoint, it's always compete and earn your spot. So I don't know if he's anybody's. I think he has the ability to be a plug and play, that type of guy that has played in two different SEC programs and step in and play. I think he definitely has the skill set, but I know that that's not a case where somebody's a shoo-in. Even for AJ Harris, I mean, we'll get to it. 5-star recruit that I thought was, I mean, like highly of coming out of high school as well. Physical, fast, big, good football instincts as a football player. But, you know, he's had limited reps at Georgia. So it's going to be interesting to see how these guys come in and get a chance to compete. But I think it's a definite step up in the talent acquisition lane for Penn State defensive back room. Lockdown you.
Lockdown you. So obviously no one's going to be handed a starting spot. Storm Duck learned that the hard way. But when you look at the overall ability of Kimber versus the existing field of Penn State corners, do you expect him to be a starter eventually?
I love how you reframe that. That's some good broadcasting interviews.
Use them words good, you know?
Yeah, they're getting right. So with that being the case, he does have the ability or the skill set that you would think he would be one of the starting quarterback corners by the time the season starts. So, I mean, guys that are internally in that room, man, come ready to compete. This is like a new dynamic that is very interesting that you don't really get to experience until you get to the NFL, where it's like, oh, you see this vet, him and the organization are arguing about a contract. He leaves. You're like, yes, I'm ready. I'm stepping in. It's my time to go. Then next thing you know, somebody's coming in with their, no pun intended, their Louis duffel bag. And it's like, hey, I'm the starting corner now.
Well, bring your Louis. Yeah, that's a big thing now.
But now in college football, it's happening. So players, guys that are on the roster, keep sharpening, because talent acquisition is never stopping.
No, it's not. Looking at Kimber's stat lines altogether, again, started it at Georgia in 2020. So he's got 2 years remaining of eligibility due to the COVID season. 2 years at Georgia, limited reps altogether. And then he gets to the University of Florida and really has a substantial amount of playing time. Overall, 39 total tackles in 4 seasons, which I wouldn't necessarily freak out about if I was anybody being like, hey, that number should be higher. 6 passes defense. Again, really started to get significant reps at the University of Florida this past season, and just one interception that came in 2022. So the stat lines, you and I talk about this all the time. Don't get hung up on stats. It's a case-by-case basis. The really positive thing I think about this guy is that he's got experience in the SEC, experience against top-end speed, considering the way the Big Ten is going to change next year with Washington, USC, UCLA, and Oregon arriving. You're going to need somebody who can hang with that type of speed. I like him getting added to this room. And I don't mean him getting added to this room and an assumed starter at some point is a snub to any of the guys Penn State has right now. I genuinely think and hope Cam Miller is that number two or maybe even the number one corner. We have to see where things go. And you said it before when we got on the heels of the Peach Bowl, is that what can happen between a bowl game and next September can be significant. And I think, hopefully, and you would know better than I, that is the hope specifically for Cam Miller in the building.
I mean, it's always beneficial to develop your internal talent or the talent that you brought through in the recruiting process, right? Because I think that always goes to the sale and the residual effect of the recruiting process for you. But with that being said, I mean, there's something to be said with continuing to get better, but if you have elite talent coming in where you can use the different position flexibility, I mean, we saw him play inside a little bit more in different things of that nature, but absolutely, you want your guys that you have internally to rise to the occasion. I mean, there's some younger guys too, like Zion Tracy or King Mack, the safeties and different, like, because even AJ Harris, he's coming in as a corner, but he has position flexibility to be able to move inside and play that star position, and that sometimes takes away a safety person that's playing that role, because he's extremely physical, has great football instincts, and has some like premier safety qualities along with playing corner. So that nice hybrid type of defensive back that you see coming in. So with that, I mean, you have long, good football players in the back end, and with that creates mismatches on the offense. So I think the more you collect that type of talent is imperative, but it's also imperative for the internal talent to continue to rise and get better.
Sure. Before we go any further, we're going to talk about AJ Harris here in just a moment, but thank you all for tuning in live. Like, comment, subscribe, turn on notifications, rate us, follow us on social media, X, Instagram, and TikTok at State of State Pod. If you got a comment or question, hop in the comment section. I see a few already. We're going to get to them. Let's talk about AJ Harris, five-star recruit out of the state of Alabama. Penn State has had a decent run as of late getting talent out of the state of Alabama. And you and I always talk about it, is that the map for college football continues to shrink as resources become greater. But getting AJ Harris is very interesting. Only played in seven games, 89 total snaps this past year for the University of Georgia. He was initially brought in when Fran Brown was the defensive backs coach at Georgia. Fran Brown is now off to be the head coach at Syracuse, and you and I have spoken very highly of the way that he took that job and was received by the Syracuse Orange fan base. It sounds like his departure meant a lot to AJ Harris. There was also discussions out there that AJ Harris may have been a little bit put off by the concept of moving to safety. He is not the fastest corner you are going to see, probably in the range of a 4.5, ran about an 11.42 in the 100-meter dash in high school. So it's not that he is slow by any means, but in terms of that top-end 4.3, 4.4 speed, hell, 4.2 if you're lucky to find it, he doesn't necessarily have that. Penn State's very, very deep at safety at this moment. I know a lot of people are looking to the days of Jaquan Brisker and Jair Brown of, oh, wow, that was deep. It's like, yeah, but there are three. You mentioned King Mack. There are really reasonably four guys that Penn State can trot out at safety. Harris feels like a little bit more of a long-term project, as multiple years of eligibility, which is great. Where do you see Harris fitting in, and what do you like about him?
Where do I see Harris fitting in? I see him fitting in somewhere in the starting rotation, whether it is at that nickel position or even moving outside. Like you said, that speed deficiency I'll call that speed deficiency is a issue. I know that's an issue internally. I know they collect speed. I know how my dad looks at corners. It's like speed. But the one thing that I have seen about him, he has a good feel for the football game. Like, he's extremely physical, breaks on balls. He's a very efficient football player from the defensive back standpoint. So I would see him coming in and like as a playmaker on the defensive side. I don't know if it's a nickel of a spot or the corner position, but there's a maturation process where, you know, yeah, I might not want to play safety or things of that nature at this spot, but then you start seeing success when you're put in the right situation with the right expectations and you have a different outcome. So, I mean, I think him within Tom Allen's defense is extremely aggressive, physical type of coach. He seems to fit within that culture. So, I mean, that's what I like about him, and I think that's where I see him fitting there.
Eli here in the comment section, kind of on the tail of what you were saying there, who starts? Wait and see. I think there's high-end potential with Kimber, especially Harris. It's going to be much more of wait and see. He only has played one season of college football. He is a true freshman, so he is developing to do. But the question here, I think, is interesting. What is Tom Allen's scheme? So what do you expect from Tom Allen in 2024?
Ooh, to be honest with you, I think Tom Allen's going to have to adapt a little bit to Penn State's scheme. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, even last year when Manny Diaz came, the staff was still intact. I think just a little bit, he kind of took over a third down back blitz package. We saw that Prowler package come in. You kind of mix that in with the success that we had. We kind of created a historical type of defense. I think the same thing is going to happen with Tom Allen. He's going to come in and have a certain aspect of the defense, but I don't know if 13 defensive coaches are going to try to learn something new from him. I think there's going to be a combining of the minds where he takes over a piece and adds his wrinkle into where it needs to fit to make something special again. I think that's what's so unique about high-level football programs is the combining of minds, the philosophies, and putting out something that, I mean, it's special. So with that being said, I mean, I think if taking over the third down package or whatever he oversees when he comes into the fold, I think the defense is going to look similar to how it looked last year.
Here's the thing for me about the defense as a whole, right? You're losing Adisa Isaac and Chop Robinson. That is a big deal. So pass rusher is going to be a focus for the next 8 months.
you get back Devon Elise and Akeem Beeman, and I believe Koziah Azard. So the interior of your defensive line, Zane Duran as well, should be intact. Now, I'm not saying that was the greatest defensive tackle core ever fielded, and that's no slight against those guys, but there have, I can think of some Bama and Georgia D tackle rooms that were freaking amazing. And it's just this group has time to develop, which is good. Yes. Defensive end, you want to see where Denai Dennis Sutton and Amin Vanover, Jameel Lyons, Uriah Fisher, where those guys wind up going, and some guys that just came in the 2024 class, maybe some freshmen that contribute. Linebacker, Abdul Carter is going to be looked to as the guy, whereas it's been Curtis Jacobs looked to as the guy the last few years, the guy with more experience. Kobe King has developed. I'd be very interested if Tony Rojas jumps into the starting rotation, because the last two years, consistently, we saw Manny Diaz gravitate more towards a base defensive alignment that was 4-2-5, five defensive backs, two linebackers, four down linemen. Now, part of that alignment, those five defensive backs, two safeties, three corners, Daquan Hardy gave you so much flexibility because he's one of the best nickel corners in America. He's going to hopefully make a lot of money on Sundays. Inherently, it feels like you could still put five out there, but maybe it's three safeties and two corners. It could be three linebackers and just four defensive backs, and you protect yourself in terms of that safety depth. Who knows? It feels like there's just a little bit more options in regard to that back seven. What do you think?
I mean, I think in the perfect world, if I was going to drop a secondary, I would want, I mean, if the four back end guys, you would want them to be 6'1", or 6 foot 190, 6 foot 190, and the back two guys, 6'1", 205, 6'1", 6'2", 210. Basically like bodies. So like when you're getting a whole bunch of defensive backs that have similar skills, you can interchange them. I think that's what made Manny Diaz's defense so unique, is that we were able to have position flexibility with the back end. If someone's motioning, you can rock and roll and play a different type of defense. I mean, just for example, Marcus Allen and Scott was in the back end, like you couldn't rotate. Oh,
Nick Scott, yes.
Nick Scott, shout out to Nick Scott, NFL Super Bowl
champion, yes, sir.
Great safety, right? But even with the way we had to operate the defense then, there were certain situations that we had to get out of because couldn't put Marcus in certain situations and wanted to see Nick in certain situations. When you have guys that can move along, it's just freeing, like, oh, we just bounce, rotate, and then you can kind of keep blitzes on. You can be more aggressive and have a little bit more exposure on the back end because you're matching up from a man-to-man standpoint and you have those skill traits across the board. So to answer that, that's what they're going for on the back end at Penn State's building their program on the defensive.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Back in.
Staying on the corners here, and I do want to get to the rest of the defense here in a bit, but you add Kimber and you add Harris. It feels like the buzz around them is that similar feeling that we have been, you know, wrapping our heads around in regard to Julian Fleming. Ooh, coming from a big brand school, he must be good. So it's like, oh, Georgia defensive back, and you get a Florida defensive back, and the Georgia guy was a five-star recruit, and people start freaking out about the stars and stuff. I get that, but I come back to everybody chill. Everybody just relax. Let's not forget Jalen Kimber. I forgot to mention this. Jalen Kimber was initially committed to Louisville and flipped to Penn State. So credit to Terry Smith for pulling that one out of the proverbial fire. But it's fans, I think, get so hung up on the fact, Justin, that he was at this school, so he must be this.
There's right. I mean, 100%. We do that in corporate America. It's like a company looks, oh, they went to Harvard, they went to Princeton, or they worked at Deloitte, they worked at Bain. And it's like, we just give them credit for being extremely smart. And it's like, not always the case. But with that, when someone's coming in, I think the comfortability or just that ease that I feel is that I understand Coach Smith's coaching philosophy, and he has evidence of impact of developing DBs, right? So the last 6 years, he's put six NFL DBs, six guys into the NFL. So when you look at those type of, I mean, again, evidence of impact of what you're able to do, I kind of chill a little bit on what's going to happen, because the thing about defensive back is, I mean, coaching matters across the board, but there's a level of how you're coached at defensive back that really makes a change, whether it's from a confidence standpoint, whether it's from how you're taught to discover, like, cover certain routes, whether it's from a confidence first or a fear first, right? You may have a coach that say, hey, watch out for a double move, watch out for this, and never really give you instances of when you can be aggressive and attack. And that's from coach to coach, whether it's the program and like their record and how they have to play with their offense, whether it can be so many different aspects. And I think what we've seen at Penn State is elite coaching from Coach Terry Smith and elite talent acquisition from the standpoint of finding defensive backs with the right traits and skill sets and develop them to their max. No one was really checking for Joey Porter when he was coming out of high school, right? Like Kalen King. I mean, he was another guy that was a four-star. I mean, him, Will Johnson out of Michigan were coming out around the same time. And just seeing how these guys are able to develop is something to really pay. I mean, Monty Amoreway, like these are guys that really developed and got to their 10. So if I'm a recruit in the transfer portal and I'm looking to be developed and go to the next level, I mean, you have to look at Penn State, and you have to look at him as one of the top defensive back coaches in the country, just in the standpoint from the talent acquisition and development and deployment standpoint, which is the merit of the position. So,
and we talk about, I've talked about Ohio State has Brian Hartline as one of the best wide receiver coaches in America that draws great wide receiver talent. Terry Smith is breeding the same thing at Penn State, and it speaks volumes that a kid went to Georgia in AJ Harris, followed Fran Brown, obviously thought the world of Fran Brown. That guy left, and it's like, man, I need to find the right place for me. And Terry Smith was an answer. And granted, there was that established relationship from the previous recruiting process, but still, it speaks volumes to what Terry has done. We showed the graphic here moments ago for those watching on YouTube and for those listening. Terry Smith helped coach an NFL draft pick each of the last 6 years. They are Joey Porter Jr., Tariq Castro Field, Zach McPherson, John Reed, Amani Uwariye, I hope I didn't butcher that, and Christian Campbell. And it looks like there will be three Penn State defensive backs that will be drafted this year: Kalen King, Johnny Dixon, and Daquan Hardy. And speaking of SEC transitions, this is right in line with what Johnny Dixon did, coming from South Carolina to Penn State, having a ton of success.
Absolutely. I mean, you just gave the, you know, just wrote the dissertation on it, because that's really what it is. Like, because even all those guys, when you look at them coming out of high school, none of them weren't, they didn't all have five-star talent. Like Monty was a little slower. John Reed, we would say, would be undersized. We didn't know, no one knew what Joey Porter was going to be. I mean, Christian Campbell's a three-star out of Phoenix, Alabama. And you just kind of see the maximizing of talent. So now when you start getting the tools, and we like to say, like, you're building furniture, like now you get the mahogany wood, and now you can really like put some things together. I really believe that that is what we're seeing. And it's just, it's a position that people don't always pay attention to. So now that we're seeing it in the track record that Penn State has, like since he's been here, this has been the best run of defensive backs in the history of Penn State, to where when I was at Penn State, yeah, I mean, it's linebacker, you, this, that, and the third. But when I was coming out of the NFL draft, there's a question mark if I could play in the NFL because I was a Penn State corner. So like the branding of even from the NFL talent acquisition was negative. And now it's a spot to be like, oh, these DBs are going to come in ready to play. Look at Joey Porter's rookie year with the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the top performing NFL DBs across the board, let alone being a rookie. And like, that's from the development from Terry Smith and his time at Penn State. So really setting up Penn State to be a premier place for defensive backs is like amazing to see, because that was always my goal when I came back in 2017.
To Joey Porter Jr.'s credit, they don't give that number 24 away in Pittsburgh for anybody. Ike Taylor wore that thing for years. That means a lot in the Steel City. That's important. Preps.com hopping in here. Lockdown. Absolutely. Lockdown you. This is a big day. Joe hopping in the comment section here. Big portal wins. Will these two commitments today start this season? We were answering that a little bit before. It's way too early to tell if these are going to start. I think there's probably a greater potential for Kimber to start than Harris, but I wouldn't be shocked if both these guys saw substantial playing time this season, because now you fortunately have seven cornerbacks on the roster and can compete for those at least two starting spots. But you're going to need that nickel package, that dime package. And I talked about it, safety, Justin, is that you've got KJ Winston, who had a wonderful rookie campaign. Add in Jalen Reed with a lot of experience now. Zaki Wheatley with a lot of experience. King Mack is somebody that we've had Kenny Sanders on this show. We've had Alan Zamitis on this show, and they've spoken very, very highly of King Mack playing with violence, very, very similar to Jaquan Brisker's early evaluations. I don't want to, you know, jump the gun with King by any means, but still, there's a lot more depth at safety that we know as opposed to corner. So again, it's just way too early to tell who's going to start. Robert hopping in here. Let's not overstate it. Agents, no doubt, told all three they'd be drafted. They may not. Robert, I strongly disagree with you. Kalen King and Johnny Dixon will go off the board. Daquan Hardy, I could see him slipping, but not because of his ability, but because the thought process, and Justin, you tell me what you think about this. The dedication in your draft board to a nickel corner, somebody that you're not trotting out there every single down on defense, may be lesser than other positions of need.
Well, I would correct you on the fact that may have been the case, but the value of a nickel has gone through the roof with the spread offenses and how things have worked. So with that, I think that is one of the reasons Hardy left is the increased value of the nickel position and the things that he's been able to put on film. And with that, I think all three are going to get drafted from just speaking to scouts every single weekend. So Rob, I've been talking to the source. So I think they might get drafted.
But, all three. You know. I would genuinely be shocked if all three of them did not get drafted. And if it was like one of them didn't get drafted, I would be pretty shocked.
No, I mean, I understand the Hardy situation. I mean, he's coming out and this, again, I would call him a purple dot from coming in from high school to college, but he's like a playmaker, returner, nickel. And again, those are premier value positions at certain organizations in the NFL. And I think he's put enough on film to not be considered like, oh, he's just like a small, undersized DB, right? Like he's an elite nickelback, and that's a different category.
So again, Penn State lands Florida defensive back Jalen Kimber and Georgia defensive back AJ Harris today in the transfer portal. Huge news. An underlying story that Penn State fans are following is a comment here from Joe that I want to bring forward. And this is very facetious and tongue-in-cheek. There is no concrete information behind this. Joe just saying, quote, congrats on James Franklin going to Alabama. Now, the news that broke yesterday and rattled the college football world, Nick Saban has retired and is no longer the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide, something that is unfathomable, but at the same time, he's 72. He has made his money. He has done everything there is to do. He is arguably the greatest college football coach that ever lived, 6 national championships. There were a bevy of names thrown out by reporters speculatively as who could potentially take the Alabama job. Names like Dan Lanning at Oregon, names like Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, names like James Franklin from Penn State. I feel like the person taking this job at Alabama has to be perfect. And not that they need to be the perfect choice, but it has to be something that that fan base is going to accept and comprehend. It's a damn near impossible job because you're trying to fill those shoes. I don't envy the person who takes this job. I personally feel very strongly that James Franklin is not going from Penn State to Alabama. If he is, be the first person to knock on my door and tell me that I was wrong, but I would be freaking stunned if Alabama pursued James Franklin and if James Franklin wanted to leave for Alabama.
Well, I wouldn't be stunned if Alabama pursued James Franklin. Let's put it that way. I wouldn't be stunned if they pursued him. Now, if he would go, that's a different story. I mean, he's a pretty smart guy when it comes to charting his career and where he has, you know, some level of leverage and what he's been able to build. But like, let's not get it twisted. I know sometimes it happens when we're here, but he's a premier, he's a top eight coach in the, undoubtedly in college football. And when we think of a position like Alabama, I think you have to make sure that the head coach operates within the whole culture, right? Even from the standpoint of Joe Moorhead taking a job at Mississippi State. Is he a great coach? Yes. Is Mississippi State and living in Mississippi the great fit for Joe Moorhead? Probably not. And I would look at the same type of thing with James, but from the other side, I mean, I could understand why Alabama, if they're looking down their short list of coaches that come into the situation, what he's been able to do and turn around at Penn State over the past 10 years, you have to consider him. I mean, so, but I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's built something special at Penn State and he wants to finish the job.
And again, I come back to what is the guy that is going to appease the Alabama fan base? There's that video out there of Alabama fan Willie in tears, and I think he was extremely drunk, so let's factor that in. But like, this is a fan base that has gotten used to winning at a very high level. Nothing against James Franklin, but in 10 years, one Big Ten title, a lot of 11 and 10 win seasons, but has not gotten over the hump. I think that would upset Alabama fans. That would be like, eh. Now you could point towards his experience in the SEC, had success at Vanderbilt. Those are not even the same world, Alabama and Vanderbilt within the SEC. Let's say that. To me, Justin, and this is just spitballing, the only guy that makes sense, the only guy that has the balls to do it is Lane Kiffin. And I believe Greg McElroy already came out today publicly and I guess had maybe some inside information is that Lane Kiffin's already out in regard to being a candidate.
That's who I would have picked. I would have said Lane Kiffin. And just and to your point where it's like the winner situation, I would my rebuttal or retort to that is that every person that you named on that list, only one person has a national championship and that's Dabo Swinney. I mean, so from that standpoint, I think all coaches are losers then. If like if we hold that standard of like if you don't win a national championship, we just gotta know like Jim Harbaugh, he never beat Urban Meyer. You know what I mean? So like when we think of winning, it becomes relative until you see that thing through. Cause now Jim Harbaugh is he's gonna be considered one of the top coaches in college football or coaching in general. But like just 3 years ago, we were talking about is it too big for him? Is it the right fit and all these different things? So I guess I'm saying that to say is winning is relative. I mean, like to be honest, because I've seen different records get portrayed or storytelling behind different lesser records hyped up a little bit differently than even James's. So I think the winning thing is interesting in college sports because every fan base has a different requirement of winning. Like Texas A&M, like they want to win a national championship, but they'll probably never win more than 9 to 10 games. Like they are who they are just based on everything else. So it's like you have to hit your maximum in whatever that ecosystem is. Cause I mean, I've talked to my friends this morning, like this, to be honest, we look at if we just put up 10 years of Penn State history forever, you can slap up the past 10 years against any 10 year span and kind of argue which run is better. So I think he could be up for it. But I don't think it's a fit for him. So I'm saying all that to say is he stays put and we keep trying to finish the job here at Penn State.
I agree. I will say this about whoever takes the Alabama job is that you are in store for a wonderful buyout. it's going to be a long. If it were me, I would argue or I would negotiate for a Jimbo Fisher-esque buyout, if not greater, since the market has now been set. Because I do not envy whoever takes that job. Because how do you follow arguably the greatest coach ever?
You can't. How do you do it? You come in as authentic as possible, and you have to be able to stand 10 toes down and like create your own lane within that organization. Because I think whatever organization, I mean, Alabama is a strong organization, but within that organization, it has to still appease those Alabama fans like Alabama Willie, right? Because I mean, I've seen it here in Pittsburgh. Like everyone's thinking like, who's going to replace Bill Cowher? Like the great Bill Cowher. Mm-hmm. And we saw someone who came the 11th choice or whoever, however low Mike Tomlin was on the list to come in. And he came in with his own unique style that fit within the Steelers organization. But I think that's kudos to the Steelers organization and knowing what they're looking for. I think a lot of times in college football, these administrators and college programs, they don't know what they're looking for. They just see like, hey, I want that guy, or I want the guy that has a high PFF, or I want this. Like, so that's my whole situation. So it's going to be interesting to see how their little talent acquisition process goes and who lands at Alabama.
Time will tell. But the news today for all of us Penn State football fans, Penn State has landed Florida defensive back Jalen Kimber and Georgia defensive back A.J. Harris in the transfer portal. Thank you all so much for tuning in. This is going to post on our audio-only platforms. Certainly a big day for Penn State football.
Thank you all so much for joining us. This episode and our entire library of shows is available now on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Also, let us know what you think of the show on social media and check out all of our content on X, Instagram, and TikTok. Search for the handle at State of State Pod. State of State is presented by Bet Online and by Blue White Outfitters.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.